Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
Well, here we are, Turkey. The president of Turkey, Erdogan, which President Obama calls one of his close friends, is pushing his country to be able to get rid of their constitution and embrace Islam as a religion. Now, the prophetic word given by John Paul Jackson over these nations is they will embrace Islam, a controlling religion. He said there's something behind that that will be way worse. And we'll make that available to you on VFNTV.com on the torch, and we'll make it related to this particular article we're talking about. But there's Satan is just evil. And the people that were backing Erdogan saying this is a good thing, now we're watching exactly what we were saying prophetically was going to happen. He's clamping down on his people, he's shutting down the press, and he's hurting and killing and persecuting Christians. Let's take a look.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan is using the failed July 15th coup to reshape Turkey in his image. Some say it is a reboot of the old Muslim Ottoman Empire, a de facto dictatorship for the immensely popular leader. In what Amnesty International has labeled a brutal backlash against enemies real or imagined, Erdogan has detained over 15,000, arrested 8,000, and dismissed 60,000 civil servants. In a speech to his followers, Erdogan, sounding more like a sultan than the president of a democracy, said, "For one time only, I will be forgiving those who disrespected me and insulted me in any way, and will be withdrawing all charges against them." Some warn that Turkey is on its way to becoming an Islamic republic like Iran, and recent developments there put Christians at even greater risk. Protestants are already not allowed to build churches and must call them associations, and some were attacked after the coup attempt. Turkey, which once had 2 million Christians, now may have as few as 120,000. There are even new concerns that the ancient Byzantine church, the Hagia Sophia, will be turned into a mosque. America's Incirlik Air Base is also at risk from rising Islamism. At this protest outside the base, the leader accused the U.S. of the crime of attacking Muslim nations. Erdogan's crackdown after the coup attempt has created a breach in relations with Turkey's Western allies, who fear they are watching Turkey turn into a dictatorship. A defiant Erdogan said relations with the West will continue, but they have no place in our hearts. Dale Hurd, CBN News.
Could you imagine the president of the United States standing up and saying, "Listen, I'm going to forgive you for what you've done, and I'm not going to hold these charges against you"? That's a dictator view of things. Turkey was a democracy, and now we're watching it go from constitutional rights where people could talk freely and publish what they're saying freely in newspapers, and we're watching the progression of where many people are wanting to take America in the same particular direction. And they come right after the church. The church can't even call themselves the church anymore. They're having to call themselves an organization or an association, they report. And if you haven't yet, you've got to see what Francis Chan was talking about. But first, he was talking about what happens when politics come in and you see this governmental oppression of the church and what's taking place. We'll talk about that in a moment. But it reminds me of the neighboring nation of Turkey, Iraq. And when Saddam Hussein came in and he started to take power and he had a coup against the current leadership, and we just saw this, you know, faux fake coup look like took place in Turkey, and it allowed Erdogan, the president of Turkey, begin to clamp down on his political enemies. It's like the Night of Long Knives in Germany. But you know what he did? He actually gathered the parliament together, Saddam Hussein did, and he had them begin to call out their names, the ones that fought against him, and took them out one by one from the governmental building, the parliament. And what did they do with them? Well, take a look. I got a video right now. You can see firsthand what happens if we turn our back on God and a tyrant takes over. Take a look.
I apologize for being blunt, but that's what they pay me for. Anyone who says, "Okay, Saddam Hussein was a bad guy," has just proved they don't know what they're talking about. Bad guy does not cover it.
I suppose I'll start with Iraq, which was best described by, has best been captured by under its old regime form, a brilliant author, Iraqi English, half Iraqi, half English author called Kanan Makia, who had to write for a long time under a protective pseudonym of Samir al-Khalil, and wrote a tremendous book called The Republic of Fear, which is the best foreword description that one could have of the regime of Saddam Hussein. If you can get hold of it, and you can, if you go back to look at the program that Kenan Makia and Hodding Carter once did for public broadcasting, you can actually get to see one of the most chilling, annihilatingly chilling, actually, videos ever made in the 20th century. It shows the moment at which Saddam Hussein, the actual moment at which Saddam Hussein seized power in Iraq for himself. There's the Central Committee of the Ba'ath Party, perhaps 100 people, are sitting in a very formal array in a conference room. And Saddam Hussein is chairing them from a podium, smoking a large cigar. And suddenly, without warning to anyone, in is dragged between two guards and in chains, a broken man, a man who's obviously physically and mentally been utterly destroyed. His personality has been evacuated. And prodded a bit, he stumbles through a confession that implicates himself and others in a plot to destroy the Iraqi Republic, to remove the regime of the Ba'ath Party, and to ruin the Iraqi revolution, the counter-revolution, in other words. Having confessed for himself and having begged to be executed for his crimes, having been reduced to a state of complete abjection, the man then says, the following members of this central committee were with me in this plot, and he begins to read out their names. Slowly. And as this happens, you can see it, the guards move every time a name is mentioned, and they grab the member of the Central Committee and lead him out of the door. And after about a dozen of these, there's panic. Sheer animal panic starts to spread among those who haven't yet been named. And in the hope that they're not going to be, they start screaming and jumping up and saying, glory to Saddam Hussein, our leader. All praise to him, the sun, the moon, the stars of Iraq, praying that it won't be them who are called next. Nothing makes any difference. The harvest just goes on randomly. They're taken off the chessboard and taken out until half of them are gone. And the rest are just limp and done for and almost dying with relief that it wasn't them. It's the most extraordinary live show of a real, for keeps, political purge that you'll ever see. And then there's the second half, where the surviving half are told to go out in the yard and are given guns and are told to shoot the convicted half. Now they're in the plot. Now they are cemented to the leadership. Now, Kenan Makia in his book says correctly, he says, Hitler wouldn't have thought of that. Stalin didn't even think of that, and he thought about these things a lot, about how to get one member of the Central Committee to betray another member and keep them all guessing so that you're the ultimate beneficiary. But this, and it's often, I think, very, very, very hard for people who live in civilized countries, democratic countries, to understand what it would be like to live even a day under a regime that was like this. I used to find in arguments about Iraq that I knew right away when someone didn't know what they were talking about. And the dead giveaway would always be when they would say, all right, I agree, Saddam Hussein is a bad guy. I said, that means you don't know. You don't know anything about it. If that's what you think. You don't know what it would be like to be sitting at home wondering where your daughter was and finding out because the police came around and banging on the door handed you a video while they stood there of her being raped by their colleagues, just to show you who was boss. The word evil, which I began with, I think does need a bit of justification. Many people think that to even use the word evil is sort of naive or morally too judgmental. You know what I'm driving at, too simplistic. And yet it's somehow a word without which we cannot do. The person who spills their cup of coffee in the morning on a copy of the party paper that has the leader's picture on it, and everyone in the cafe goes completely quiet. You just desecrated a picture of the leader. The police are on their way now. You've just made the biggest mistake of your life.
So you're looking, that is what took place in a neighboring country, and now we're seeing that very same thing begin to appear to unfold in Turkey. It used to be the NATO ally, it was the American friend. You know, when you saw Erdogan, President Erdogan, right in front of the founding president, leader of Turkey, he's the total opposite of that particular founder, because that founder did not want to have a Islamic government. They wanted to have a secular government that allowed for all religion to be able to function in that particular country. And then now they're forcing, it looks like, Islam. And he tried it a couple of times. We talked about it on the program a couple of times, and it didn't work when they tried to get the people to vote their constitutional rights away. And now we're seeing it taken by force. We need to learn from this, because that's what the adversary would love to do in America.
Here we are, you know, looking at this crisis taking place in Turkey. And we're just repeating is what took place in Iraq. But you think about it. Okay, the world's going to do what the world's going to do. But where does the church and where does Israel stand in this? It's very important. Ever how goes Israel, so goes the church. And we're looking at Israel totally surrounded. We're watching the church has to call themselves an association. Listen, you got to learn how to be the church. It's time to, you're just going to have to learn how to be the church. Don't off it on other people. Begin to read the Word of God. I encourage you, if you have not yet gone to vinefellowshipnetwork.org, you need to check it out. Go to Emmaus Road, take a look at that. You got to find out how to do this thing before they call the thing that you go to now, an association, mm-hmm. because the church doesn't go away. A building may go away, but God's kingdom is forever. As a matter of fact, when I think about Francis Chan, when Francis Chan was talking about history, the difference between the Russia church and the China church, when both governments wanted to do away, like Erdogan's doing now, with the church. Let's take a look and listen to what Francis Chan found out from history, what we have to face down the road, possibly in America.
Sure. Because, here's the thing, I'm not trying to be prophetic right now, I'm just using my logic, and I'm going, I think the way the world is going, the way the U.S. is going, I think there's going to come a time, and it's probably going to be sooner than later, when what I do in a public forum is going to be labeled as a hate crime. That a lot of things that we teach will be labeled as hate speech. And will these public forums even be able to take place? And as we get closer to that, and there becomes this little war of whether we can do it or not, we'll be so consumed with winning this war that we'll forget about preparing for the future. And again, let me just throw a couple examples out at you. And I'm not saying this is where the U.S. is going. Understand me. I just want to throw a thought out at you. And again, it's from history, which I'm terrible at history. But this I do know because I read it in a book. We had these communist revolutions in China and in Russia. In both revolutions, they were trying to kill the church, right? I mean, the whole point is we're gonna destroy the church. And now in Russia, everything was built around cathedrals and these priests. Everything was centered around these buildings and these teachers. The moment the government took away these teachers and the church assets, the people didn't know where to turn. They didn't know how to grow. They didn't know how to disciple. And so the church basically died. In China, same thing happened. And under Mao Zedong, they tried to they got rid of all the buildings. But there was something different about the church in China. See, what before all that happened, they had empowered the ordinary Christians. And the ordinary Christians knew how to lead others to the Lord. The everyday church attender knew how to teach others how to grow in their faith. So when they took away the leaders and they took away the church buildings, the church was fine. The people were fine. In fact, under Mao Zedong, the church, the persecuted church, grew from 2 million to an estimated about 80 million in these underground gatherings. Why? Because the people They understood how to minister to other people. They knew how to teach other people. And I just want you to look at your life and go, okay, which camp would I fall into? Would I be one of those that's just lost? Like, wow, what do we do now? The building's gone? The leadership's gone? Or do you just go, we don't really need a building. And I know the Word of God. And I know how to lead other people. And I, when I look at what God's doing with people craving this type of leadership and this type of movement, I go, it could be the Lord preparing us for the future. And it's pretty exciting to be a part of that. And I hope you get excited about that. And I hope you go, okay, what would it look like for me? And am I this leader? Am I making a disciple? Because regardless, biblically, that's what we're supposed to be doing.
So we've got to be prepared. This is happening all around us. And it would be totally different if our current leadership wasn't embracing this reality and partnering with the Muslim Brotherhood and putting him on the Homeland Security. And Jay Johnson, the head of the Homeland Security, going, Islam is a peaceful religion. And getting rid of every mention, according to Michelle Bachmann, of anything about Islam, radical Islam, being an adversary of any nation in our own FBI and CIA books. I mean, we got a storm is being fashioned, so we need to wake up as the church, you know, and say, you know, what do I have to do here? You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFNTV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFNTV and the Daily Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Like.